For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder. On the eve of Greece's parliamentary elections, the emergence of a leftist coalition as a major power broker in Greek politics has the international business press in a tizzy. But in Greece, crushed by austerity measures imposed from abroad, their patrimony auctioned to the highest bidder, and skewered by world opinion, the populace finally had enough. Last month, Greek voters routed the two main political parties that approved the Greek bailout deal, instead giving 16% of the vote to Syriza, also called the Party of the Radical Left. Syriza forced new elections rather than join a new government with the parties it blames for holding Greece hostage to European bankers. Those elections take place tomorrow. We're joined today from Athens by Maria Margaronis, an Anglo-Greek journalist who has been covering the Greek crisis since it began. Ms. Margaronis is a London correspondent for The Nation magazine and a frequent contributor to the British newspaper The Guardian and to the BBC. Maria Margaronis, welcome to Sounds of Dissent.
Hi, Amy. Thanks a lot.
It's such a pleasure to have you. For months, media coverage of Greece has been almost exclusively focused on the effect of the Greek economic crisis on markets. Now we're focused on the effect of the election on markets. So the popularity of Syriza seems to have taken at least the U.S. press by surprise. Were you surprised?
By the popularity of Syriza? Yes, I was surprised. They got 17% in the last round of the elections, which is a much larger percentage than they've ever had in the past. They were a small opposition party. They weren't actually officially a party. They were a coalition, which has in it various different left groups, from Euro-communists to Trotskyists to Greens to feminists to all kinds of different groups that have come together and fallen apart many times in an attempt to make a unified Greek left electoral force beyond the Communist Party, which is a small kind of neo-Stalinist party that regularly polls, it regularly polls between 8 and 10%. It did less well in the last election, and it will probably do less well still tomorrow. But three reasons for Syriza's popularity. One is that the two main parties, PASOK, the Socialist Party, and New Democracy, the center-right party, are seen as and are indeed responsible for the state the Greek economy is in, having alternately ruled the country since the fall of the dictatorship in 1974. And PASOK in particular is the party that brought in the IMF and the European Commission and the austerity measures and then applied them in the most unjust possible way so as not to alienate its own base. So there's been a complete collapse of faith in these two parties. And Greece isn't the only country in Europe where there's been a loss of faith in the traditional ruling parties. We've seen, you know, the same thing, a lot of parties being voted out of power in Europe, both on the left and the right, because the traditional elites are sort of failing to manage the crisis. But Syriza roared in to fill this gap for a number of reasons. One is that Syriza, and in particular Alexis Tsipras, its very charismatic young leader, has found the way to speak to and take up the enthusiasm of the little movements that have grown in Greece during the course of the crisis. Last year, people were looking at the camp in Syntagma Square, the direct democracy camp, and the big demonstrations in Syntagma, which the camp was cleared, and that big movement fragmented and went into the neighborhoods where people have been organizing to resist the electricity tax, a property tax that's been put on people's electricity bills, with a penalty for non-payment being having your electricity cut off, and various other solidarity projects, soup kitchens, this, that, and the other. So that kind of general anti-austerity, anti-memorandum, as it's called here, the memorandum being the Greek side of the bailout agreement, those forces, which are very diverse, in fact, have turned towards Syriza and Alexis Tsipras. And the other thing he did, which was extremely shrewd of him and very perceptive, is that he managed to articulate the ways in which this crisis is not just a Greek crisis, but a European and global economic crisis, and to say, we've been guinea pigs here, we've been lab rats, we are no longer going to bear the brunt of this crisis. We're saying, no, this has to be solved at an international and European level. And he's done that in a way that's very appealing to people here, which is to kind of stand up and say, I'm going to stick up for you, I'm going to stand up, I'm not going to take this lying down, in a slightly kind of macho, sort of very populist way. And so a lot of people have gravitated towards him, including a lot of the old PASOK base, which is something that slightly troubles me about Syriza, which is some of the old rather corrupt PASOK trade unions, the feather-bedded unions, and the clients of PASOK have now moved round to Syriza. And I'm slightly, well, I've no idea what's going to happen after tomorrow, but there's a slight feeling that maybe it's not as new as it might seem after all. Sorry, that was a very long answer.
That's a great answer. So there's some sense, I guess you're suggesting that Syriza may not keep to the course that it's currently articulating with the participation of these others?
Well, it's not clear what course it's articulating because, I mean, if you think about it, here's a party it never expected to be in power. You know, until the beginning of May, it was a party that was an oppositional force, and it says all the kind of traditional left grassrootsy things about how we have to govern with the people and we have to have forces outside parliament and so on. And if you look at, you know, if you look at the people in the Syriza offices, there's some young people, but there's also a lot of guys who look like they come from the old New Left, which they do. They have articulated an economic program, but it's not, there's been a lot of different messages coming out. I mean, at one point, one person said that they would nationalize bank deposits,
Nationalize the bank deposits.
Well, that's one part, but they were going to commandeer bank deposits over €20,000 to use them for investment, and everybody panicked. Tsipras himself has at times said we're going to overturn the memorandum, we're going to cancel the memorandum, and at other times he said we're going to renegotiate the memorandum. So, you know, and the actual economic policies are not extremely clear. They're going to tax the rich, good. But there's also this claim that they're going to bring back somehow all the money that's been taken offshore by wealthy Greeks, which is a huge amount of money. But it's not clear how they're going to do that. How are you going to force the Swiss banks to, you know, send the money back to Greece? So it's not so much that they won't stick to the program they've articulated. It's that the program is not clear.
Well, it's. I wonder if you could say something. A lot of our listeners, I think over in Europe, people refer to the memorandum, and perhaps in Greece as well. Listeners here might know it as the bailout agreement or the bailout terms.
Yes.
Could you say something about what was in those terms that was so difficult for Greece? Go ahead.
Well, there are a number of different aspects of this, but it's basically a neoliberal economic program of the kind that the IMF has traditionally imposed on third world countries. So the idea was to create what's called an internal devaluation. Because Greece is in the euro and therefore can't get out of the crisis by devaluing its currency, the idea was that we were going to make labor in Greece much cheaper so that, for example, the minimum wage has been quite drastically reduced. Union agreements have been cancelled. Collective pay agreements are supposed to be cancelled. There's meant to be a liberalization of the labor market, which in some respects is necessary here because Greece is a tremendously bureaucratic country.
What does that mean?
Very difficult. Well, that means that if you want to start up a business, you have to jump through countless hoops and red tape. You have to go to 20 different agencies and get 20 different permissions, which all involve some bureaucrat sticking a stamp on a piece of paper and getting paid for it. Everyone agrees that these things have to change, and those things are in place because of the old client system where political parties would give jobs and favors for votes. But that's one thing. The memorandum didn't ever look at the microscopic detail of the Greek economy. It was about cutting wages, firing public sector workers. 150,000 public sector workers are supposed to be fired by 2015. Raising taxes, and this has effectively crushed the Greek economy. It's a straight austerity program, and what we have now is more than 22% of the population out of work, half of young people out of work. If you walk through Athens, half the shops are closed, and the ones that aren't are having 50% sales, 70% sales. Every building has for rent signs all over it. It's a dead economy. And with all the panic before the election, things have got even worse, so that apparently some foreign companies are now refusing to export to Greece. Certainly nobody's exporting on credit. There's a terrible shortage of medicines. People are queuing for medicines. Cancer patients are not getting the drugs they need. And everything has economically ground to a standstill. And I haven't read a single piece by a serious economist saying that this is actually going to work, that it's going to pull Greece out of its debt crisis. Nobody thinks it's going to work. It's partly here as a kind of terrible warning and example to the rest of Europe.
The New York Times reported a couple of weeks ago that most of the bailout funds are circulating back into the pockets of the lenders. In other words, the banks lent money to repay themselves.
JP Morgan, I read this morning, has said that out of the, I think, 410 billion, I'm not sure if it's dollars or euros, lent to Greece, only 15 is actually going to the Greek people. The rest is, yes, is to pay back the banks.
But the Greeks still have to pay interest on it, right?
Yes, of course. I mean, it's the loan under the so-called haircut, the renegotiation of the loan, the European loans are now just at 3%. But even so, people obviously deeply resent this. And when you say to people, well, what do you think, what will happen if Greece goes bankrupt? They say, well, we're already bankrupt. This is, how much worse can it get? There is tremendous rage and resentment about that, and a very clear sense that it isn't going to work. And so something else has to happen. Now, we've got a change in Europe as well going on at the moment. It's not clear yet what that's going to mean. We've got the French parliamentary election coming up too, but we've got François Hollande in France, who is slightly softer, not as much softer perhaps as one might have hoped, on austerity.
He did come out in favor of that memorandum, didn't he?
He did come out in favor of the memorandum, but he is also, he's not Sarkozy. So there was a lot of hope here when he was elected, but, it's not at all clear. But then there's been the Spanish bailout, the bailout of the Spanish banks, I should say, because it is explicitly a bank bailout, which has made people here furious, because how come the Spanish banks suddenly get 100 million euros without any memorandum? Well, the reason is because the Spanish Prime Minister Rajoy is already imposing austerity measures. But, you can see why to Greeks this seems intensely unjust. So, people are very angry, but also very frightened, because there's been a lot of talk about what if Tsipras rejects the memorandum and then the bailout funds are cut off and then Greece doesn't have any money. I mean, Greece is very close to running out of money to pay public sector salaries. There's a threat from Gazprom, which supplies quite a lot of electricity, to cut off the electricity supply. There's threats of blackouts. We're quite close to that kind of an edge. So what if Tsipras cancels the memorandum, and then they don't give us the next bit of the loans, and then what solution is there but to print money? And that is the mechanism by which Greece would exit the Eurozone, would be if payments were stopped and it had to print its own money, and we go back to the drachma.
Well, actually,
which is a very scary scenario.
Well, yeah, we had Marshall Auerbach, a hedge fund manager and a fellow with Economists for Peace and Security. He joined us early last March, and he basically made the case for default, saying that it was actually in Greek self-interest, that once they do that, that the power will shift, the ball will shift to their court, more or less. And we talked about the example of Argentina, who was similarly, warned also in 2001, had the economic meltdown because, they went off their peg with the dollar, which is kind of a similar thing. They didn't have their own currency in a way because it was pegged to the dollar. I know there's a difference, but point being that they're now at 8% growth. It took them a while, but they recovered. It didn't take that long either.
Well, yeah, the Argentina parallel is a very tricky one. There are several important differences. I mean, one is that, yes, Argentina had the peso was pegged to the dollar, but it did have its own currency. And Greece buys, so at the moment, we import 40% of the food, all the oil Greece uses, most of the medicines, and all the other consumer goods, all the machinery for manufacturing, Greek industry is sort of in a state of collapse, but all the machinery is imported. Imagine what would happen if those things suddenly had to be bought not in euros, but in drachmas, and in a highly devalued drachma, so that they would cost twice as much. That's one important difference. Another difference is that Greece doesn't export very much. I mean, its biggest money spinners are shipping, which is offshore anyway and isn't affected by currency, and tourism, which is has been very hard hit by the crisis, and I have to say by the kind of hysterical media coverage of, you know, violence here, et cetera, et cetera. We should talk about that too, and although there isn't violence. But so, you know, whereas Argentina had much more to export. It had all its soy fields and its beef and its and all of that. And people forget how very difficult it was for Argentina in that period anyway. I mean, people went hungry. People are already going hungry here, but I think that a sudden chaotic, not default necessarily, because it is theoretically possible to have a default within the euro, but that would have to be agreed by all the eurozone countries. But if Greece were to return to the drachma, I think things would be extremely difficult here for quite a long time. And maybe this is the moment to talk about political chaos, because one of the effects of, one of the most frightening effects to me, of the collapse, and it's a very personal collapse as well as a kind of economic one. It's people, the stories people have told themselves about their lives for decades just no longer seem true. The futures people imagine for themselves and for their children don't exist anymore. So there's a tremendous depression, and somebody told me today there have been 6 more suicides since the beginning of June. And Greece was not a suicide culture at all. It's a very social, family-oriented, supportive kind of society. So one of the effects of all of this has been the rise of the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party.
Yes, talk about them.
Which, yeah, who are, they've been around since the early 80s. They started out as a kind of nationalist party opposed to Greek minorities like the Macedonian speakers in the north. As immigration into Greece increased through the 80s, 90s, and the teens, they became much more turned against immigrants. This is a very real problem in Greece, because almost all the migrants coming from Asia and Africa into the European Union come through here over the long border with Turkey. And so in Athens, you have whole neighborhoods completely packed with destitute refugees and migrants who've come here, been trafficked here, hoping to get to Europe, and can't leave because they don't have papers to leave, and it's very expensive to get trafficked out to Italy, and the Greek police try to stop them because they're not supposed to leave. So there is it's a real social problem. You know, people, it's not just a racist thing to say this is an issue, and it's a problem that Europe also has to solve, because that's where these people want to go. So Golden Dawn has gathered strength by attacking and beating up these poor migrants, clearing them out of neighborhoods, becoming a sort of vigilante police force in these neighborhoods where there is indeed a tremendous increase in crime. And they won 7% almost of the vote on May the 6th and 21 seats in Parliament. And we're talking real neo-Nazis, you know, with fascist salutes, Holocaust denial, thuggish behavior, and violence, ideologically driven violence.
Their leader attacked someone on national television, didn't he?
It wasn't their leader, it was their press spokesman, Kassidiaris, who hit a woman MP from Syriza and threw a glass of water over another one from the Communist Party. And the really scary thing about that, first the police didn't arrest him. In Greece you have 48 hours to arrest someone after a crime is committed in order for it to be tried as sort of caught red-handed. They somehow didn't manage to find him in those 48 hours. I've heard that half the police in Athens voted for Golden Dawn. Golden Dawn certainly has had the tolerance, if not the support, of the police for a long time. And the other frightening thing is how many people said, well, good for him. And there's a kind of anti-feminist element to this, too, you know, that he hit this uppity woman. But it's a reflection of the rage and the humiliation and the sense of lost dignity that people have. Last week I was in Evia, which is an island where I've been going for a long time. It's a left-wing community, and there too, Golden Dawn got 7% of the vote. And I asked people, why is this? And they're just saying, well, it's out of reaction. People say, we want them in Parliament to beat the others up because there's such a total loss of faith in politicians. And because people are prepared to vote for anybody who will give them back a sense of dignity. It's a very peculiar sense of dignity. But, you know, there are daily episodes on the street in Athens now of Golden Dawn beating people up. And there has been a feeling of violence growing all the time. And I think it's very important to make a distinction between this fascist violence, which is ideological and a sort of free-floating violence that you see both with, you know, in demonstrations with hooded anti-establishment people throwing, you know, chipping away the marble and throwing stones at the police and sometimes at each other. Police violence, the riot police, you know, coming down with their batons and their tear gas. Criminal violence and just people losing it on the street and yelling at each other because people have had it. This is a society at the end. It can't go on like this anymore.
Do you see any do you fear when you think about the history of Greece, the past of civil war, dictatorship?
I do.
Obviously, I mean, you don't think there would be anything like a coup, obviously. But what do you think?
Well, you know, if the army hadn't been purged, which it mostly pretty much has, this would be a prime moment for a coup, absolutely. But I don't think there's the sort of backing for a coup, and I don't think there is exactly either the potential for a civil war. Although politics has become extremely polarized, I think what we're more likely to see is more of this kind of anomic violence of, you know, small group violence here and there. But many people have said to me, we're heading for a civil war. People have said, you know, I don't recognize those other people as my compatriots. And it's not clear where the lines would be drawn. It's not like in the Civil War in the 1940s, which was the first, it was the hot war that started the Cold War in Europe, and it was where the Truman Doctrine was promulgated, which was a civil war between you know, communist-led left forces and royalist right-wing forces, nationalist forces. It's not going to be that. It's going to be something else. I'm afraid of kind of total social breakdown, and, you know, there are already robberies all the time and break-ins.
Sounds like it's happening.
It is happening. It's already happening. And I am not sure, and many people I've, you know, who I've just talked to around are not sure, that the election is going to change that much. If Syriza wins, there's going to be a big party in Syndagma. There's going to be a lot of celebration. Hooray, we have a left government. But things are going to continue to be very, very, very difficult. And I'm not sure that they're going to be able to hold it together. If Nea Dimokratia wins, we'll have more, and even if they're able to renegotiate the memorandum, we'll have more of these policies, more rage, more anger. I won't be surprised, whatever happens, if there's another election in a few months. So it's really a horribly bleak situation, and I've come back this time, you know, wanting to look for little bits of hope. And over the last year, the hope I found has been in the little grassroots things that people have organized that I mentioned earlier. And, you know, that's, we need here to be much more engaged with doing things like that, with
you
running
did.
Things ourselves.
You did write a lovely piece about that in a story called Greece and Meltdown.
It's there. It's, you know, all those things are there, but I'm a bit afraid that at the moment this has all been taken up by this kind of election madness, you know, and are you going to vote Syriza, are you going to vote some other left party, or and I don't know. There's a word in Greek, kapelona, which means literally to put a hat on something. It means to appropriate it. And most sort of grassroots movement in the past have been appropriated by one of the main political parties, usually PASOK or the Communist Party. And I'm slightly worried about the appropriation of these movements by Syriza. Now, I came over on the plane with a couple of Greek students from London who were really very interesting and wonderful, and assured me that, talking to them assured me that isn't entirely the case, and that a lot of kind of young people are still very suspicious of Syriza too as a sort of new establishment force. But I just really hope that people are able to keep doing that stuff, and not just in solidarity movements, but also in terms of being able to find ways to start small innovative businesses or, you know, do make economic initiatives that might eventually start to get us out of this and able to stand relatively on our own feet.
Maria Margaronis, we're at the end of our hour. I'm so pleased to have you join us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy. It was a real pleasure. We'll wait and see what happens tomorrow.
And I hope we can speak again with you sometime.
Yeah, would love to.
All the best
to you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We were speaking with Anglo-Greek journalist Maria Margaronis. She's the London correspondent for The Nation magazine. She joined us from Athens to talk about the Greek elections tomorrow, a rather sobering account of conditions in Greece. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder.